All right, what's up? Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on SportsNet 650.
We really went to the end of that track.
Yes, we did. I was letting it run, letting it breathe.
We are back? We're back, segment two.
Sometimes you just got to let it breathe a little bit. We are back here on Canucks Talk, live from the Kintech Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. We have Landon Ferraro in studio. Our producer Lena is valiantly trying to get his mic hooked up as we speak. So we'll get Landon involved in the conversation momentarily here.
I'm excited that we got to move the noodle, text into the inbox.
I definitely considered saying that that Connor Garland moved the noodle for the Canucks last night.
I'm sort of two minds. Should we lean in and do like a moves the noodle tears, or are we pasta point?
No, I think you got to lean into it.
Of doing those noodle jokes.
I think you got to lean into it. So for Landon, if you didn't listen to the show, and I mean, how could you, first of all? But if you didn't listen to the show yesterday, I was trying to describe that the Canucks needed a defenseman who could move the needle. And I accidentally said move the noodle, which is a really stupid thing to say. A really embarrassing mistake on my part. But our listeners, I guess some of them liked it a little bit.
Specifically me.
all right. We're still having some technical difficulties here, but we will get Landon involved in the conversation. Hopefully anytime here. 650-650 again is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So you can get your thoughts, your questions in. As the Canucks taking on the Nashville Predators in the second half of a back-to-back tonight at Rogers Arena before heading out on the road. And Nashville, you know, interesting. We've talked a lot about Nashville, I think, around the NHL.
Do we know if we have Landon?
I don't think we do. I assume the fact that people are coming in and out means that we do not have the ability to talk to Landon yet. So we'll just go for a little bit here. Nashville, you know, it looked maybe like they were turning a corner there, but now they've lost three in a row. Defensive issues have really cropped up, and they're the favorites tonight, which is understandable given where the Canucks roster is and the fact that they're on a back-to-back. Yeah. They beat the Canucks at Rogers Arena once already this year, but still, you know, I mean, you were saying, what, look at these next three games, Seattle, Nashville, and Montreal, and like, hey, if you can go 500, 3 points through those three games, given the state of your roster right now, that's not bad. Well, you got two last night in Seattle, an opportunity here to, you know, somehow find a way to pick up a point and continue to tread water without Hughes and Pettersson.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing from Nashville, I think we're beginning to see the outlines of the offensive team we were expecting, right? Because, like, Andrew Brunette is a top line, top end offensive coach. And, you know, you can see the way that the Nashville Predators build up. There's intent, thoughtfulness behind it. I think they've got some structural creativity to their game, even though they've struggled. Like, guys like Marchessault have really struggled at 5-on-5. Guys like Stamkos have really struggled. I mean, all the guys they signed, basically, have really struggled 5-on-5. They're actually, you know, about 20 games in, they started to generate more or less the way we'd expect. Like a top 10 5-on-5 offense. Problem is, they've also defended like a bottom five NHL defense. And you know, when you combine like what Tomasino's done to punch up the Penguins, who's the defenseman that they lost to Columbus who's played well with
Fabro,
local kid,
yeah,
Dante Fabro, and sort of how he performed in Nashville, honestly, what Gouley and Carrier, which we'll see on Monday, how that pair has looked for Montreal. I mean, it does sort of feel like there's been an evaluative inefficiency that has kind of dogged and maybe held back this Predators team. Like, given how some of the guys they had to discard because of the bodies that they brought in and performed, you know, and the fact that the guys they paid a lot have struggled, you know, there's a certain element to which, you know, the Nashville Predators summer like already stinks and we're just 35 games into it.
Oh, yeah. It's been stinking for a while now, for sure.
And now it's like moldy cheese. Stinky.
We got the least confident ever thumbs up from Cam Barra. So let's see. Let's see if we're in business here. Landon?
Am I alive?
Yeah!
There we go.
We're doing it. We are doing it. He is former NHL player, now Canucks analyst here on 650 on Sportsnet TV, Landon Ferraro. Thanks for doing this. Happy New Year.
Happy
now, is
New
it too
Year.
Late?
I will say this is the cutoff. And that, right. For me, the cutoff was a couple days ago, simply because I just moved back.
So you're a January 1st guy, straight. Just only January 1st.
Yeah, I just like telling people have a good day. It seems to be enough.
Fair enough.
You know, is it not? I think so.
I don't think there's any, like, I never am told Happy New Year by someone, and I'm like, that made me feel a little bit more special than any other acknowledgement they could have given me. You know what I mean? There's nothing unique to it.
I'm not, like, jonesing for a Happy New Year, but I'm not opposed to it either.
No, I'm definitely not offended, but there's no benefit to it over a, like, have a good day.
Sure.
Like, well, that's nice.
I just enjoy when you say something, the person actually acknowledges it, because there's nothing worse than, like, you're walking the dog down the sidewalk, someone walk by, they give you a little eye, like, you've made eye contact.
Right.
Like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
Hey. And they just stare right through your soul. Like, you've just committed 12 crimes. They know you're on the run. Like, can we all just be a little civil?
But come on, that's why we invented the head bob.
I think Vancouver's bad. I think Vancouver is bad for that. Not for a friendly city. No. Yeah, not a friendly city. We don't like giving the hi or hello back.
Well, it doesn't help through the winter that you're basically staring at the pavement walking through.
Yeah, 100%.
Every day, so you don't generally look up.
I can't
much.
Even hear stuff because of my hood. And I mean, my AirPods, but also my hood.
And I wouldn't want to say hello anyway.
Absolutely not. I have a well-prescribed head nod. I've worked on it. I've studied,
perfected it over the years. 100%. Eh?
I'm ready to give you a polite acknowledgement with a slightly upward tilt of my head that makes both of us feel uncomfortable.
I will say once during the summer, I was having lunch, I think, with my family on a patio on Main Street, and Drance was walking down the street, but I didn't recognize him, and he made eye contact with me and gave me, like, well, he's wearing glasses, but he was looking at me, sunglasses, and he gave me like three or four really deliberate head nods, and I was like, who the heck is this guy nodding his head at me? But it was a very pronounced deliberate head nod.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's Drance. Yes, I've seen it in action.
See the guy every day.
Yeah, I know. Like, why is this guy nodding his head at me? What's wrong with him?
The disguise of sunglasses. I'll never figure this out.
Really threw me for a loop.
At the very least, I've proven that Superman is realistic.
Yes, exactly. Put some glasses on.
The moment he takes his glasses off, I have no idea who he is.
All right. Anyways.
Can we start with World Juniors?
I wanted to get Landon's thoughts on that as well. So the whole country up in arms, second straight year out in the quarterfinals. And I don't know if we're going to do a summit, but, you know, the top brass above the coach for Hockey Canada kind of out facing the music a little bit today. Watching the tournament, I mean, what stands out to you? What are the lessons that Hockey Canada needs to take to get back to being dominant, or even just, you know, playing in the gold medal game at this tournament consistently?
Don't overthink roster construction. I would probably say is the first thing. Like, watching, was it Al Murray talking this morning, mm-hmm. saying, like, you know, we tried to take guys that have talent, but, you know, that can play hard too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know many 16 to 20 year olds that don't play hard that are at that level, right? Like, they left some very notable scorers off the roster to try and, you know, make sure that they had a full depth team, all this stuff. But, you know, like, I used to skate with another local kid of Andrew Kristall that plays in Kelowna. Like, that kid is an absolute sniper. I just looked yesterday. Like, he's on pace for 130 points this year, and all he does is score. Like, that needs to be on the team.
Yeah.
Like, you can't overthink things. And I think over the years, Hockey Canada is slowly, I don't want to say complacent, but definitely, like, they think that they make the better decisions, and they're always going to come out with the best possible roster, when sometimes with, you know, you're playing a national team, like, just take the best players.
Yeah.
And then you chuck in, you know, using guys from older teams where they did more of that, like, then you chuck in a 2-2 that can run around and hit.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't have, I mean, the biggest thing is, like, you just can't take, I don't know the number, but 197 minutes in four games,
mm-hmm.
like, of penalties. Like, you can't survive like that. It just doesn't work.
Well, and I do wonder if those things are connected a little bit, right? Where it's, you're trying to build such an identity, and, you know, going back to all the old school Canada hockey stuff, right? Where it's, we're the toughest team, we're the most physical team, you know, we're not going to take all skill because we're going to play a different style. And I think it's natural, if that's the messaging, if that's the overarching philosophy, like, I think not that it's impossible to be disciplined in that context, but I also can see how it would lead to undisciplined play if you're so focused on that identity to the exclusion of everything else.
And I think you also have to really look at how the international games have been changed, like how they've changed over the years and how they're called now. Like, you know, that knee yesterday, is that yesterday?
Yes,
it seems
yesterday,
like 3 days ago already.
Yeah,
no. That knee yesterday early, like, that's not a knee.
Yeah.
A major over here. It might be a 2-minute call.
Yeah.
But it's international hockey. You know what is going to happen. Like, you can't take those risks because you know that that is how those games are played. They don't care if they call 4 of those in a game. Like, if they think it's the right call, they will make it. It's not like North America where you definitely see a bit more of
the management.
Like, as long as if one team is the more of the aggressor, you make sure they have, you know, 1 or 2more penalties. But past that, you just try and keep it somewhat even and keep yourself out of the game. The international refs, I mean, heck, they got cameras on their head. They are part of the game.
Yeah.
And they're going to make their calls.
I was shocked. Well, I think the thing that I found most shocking, because I was pretty critical about the composition of this roster leading up to it. But the deployment during the tournament, and we can talk about Oliver Bonk in the bumper, a defenseman in the bumper who doesn't even, I mean, he does play the bumper in London, but like they have the PP1 defenseman from his team on that roster and he's not on PP1. There was a lot of baffling stuff, but it was the, like there was an offensive zone sequence that I noted during that game where the puck kicked to the point. Right. And all 3 of the forwards flooded the net front for a stationary point shot. Right. And it's just like none of these guys released to go high. No one climbed the wall on the strong side. Like neither deactivated. Yeah. And that's not even systems. That's just like offensive zone concepts. It just felt like I on some level, I'm reluctant to suggest that we need to learn XYZ lesson from this team because I think it was just fundamentally poorly coached.
I mean, it's tough when you're in a short tournament and it's not like you've gone through a bunch of like battle games
right.
and like these crazy intense things where guys are beat up all over the place and yet like they don't morning skate, they skip a couple practices trying to make sure guys are rested.
Yeah.
And like I fully understand that, but I saw, you know, I mean, I'm sure there was a million tweets of it as well, but like, what 18 or 19 year old needs that much of a break? Like you're at the World Juniors, you've waited your entire life to get there.
For this moment,
you're going to be able to find a bit of energy somewhere. And that's like, if you look at all the World Juniors going back, you know, 20 years, there's issues in the first 2 games of someone's getting kicked out early and there's a bunch of penalties. And then the team learns, okay, that's what the standard is. And then they move along. And this team just did not learn that this year, and it's tough. Like, you know, again, like I only played U18s, I didn't get to go to the World Juniors, but like the feeling I had at U18s going out for the first time, like you feel like, you know, it's such a dumb thing to say, but like you feel like you can run through a wall.
Yeah,
like you're so amped up, it's the first time you have the jersey on, all these things. Like it's hard to get yourself back to a manageable level of excitement.
Right.
Like it's never the other way. I can't remember one time in that tournament where I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, I am gassed. I don't know if I can play today. Like, God, get back out there. Like I missed a chance last game. Like,
right.
I want to do well in this jersey.
Yeah. And another issue that was raised when they were speaking to the media today, I forget who asked it, but basically, you know, it starts even at the U17s, the U18s. Hockey Canada identifies their guys. And then by the time the U20s roll around, they're pretty locked in, or they can get pretty locked into, well, hey, this guy's been in the program, right? And we've developed him and we've had him at these tournaments. And maybe they're a little too unwilling to go outside of that. If someone does, like Andrew Crystal, right? If he pops off and he's like, oh man, this guy is incredible. Are they too unwilling to go to him? And I think we even see that trickle up to the men's when they do, or when they are able to pick a senior men's team. It's okay. Well, was this guy at the World Juniors first? Like, do we have a relationship with this guy?
You have to be pretty absurdly special to get back on the track if you haven't been on it, right? Like,
yeah.
Like Kent Johnson did. Kent Johnson finally represented Team Canada at the U20s in his second year of eligibility. And it like took him being drafted, what, 4th overall being like the highest riser in his draft class and then being point per game plus as a freshman in, at Michigan. And finally they were like, yeah, we probably can't leave this guy off the team, but that's a preposterous standard.
Well, I mean, it's I'm blanking on his first name, but like when I was a bit younger than trying to make that team, Esposito, what was his
first? Angelo. Yeah.
Like they cut that poor kid, was it five times or four?
Yeah.
Like,
what did they know?
But, you know, again, like, it's kind of to what you say, though, like they've made up their minds. Like when I went to my first U18 camp, I had one of the coaches pull me into a little quick meeting after the first day and said, like, hey, like, I think, and he was super nice about it. Like, it wasn't an issue that way, but it was like, hey, I think you're a really good player, but you're not going to be on the top two lines, and I don't think you can play on the bottom two lines. My camp was done right there. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, what am I doing here then?
Sure.
You know, like, but it's exactly what you're saying. Like, guys get thrown, and it happens all the way up to NHL, even when a guy's 35 and he's shown for 8 years that he's not that anymore. Yet it still comes into the conversation. Like, it's tough, but you get so set on things. And, you know, I think that not new blood, but like, there needs to be some more just thinking involved in the sense of, can we break this down to, you know, baseline again and then start building this back up? Like, you know, Justin Poggi is now the Abbotsford goalie coach here, and he was with Hockey Canada the last couple of years. Like, that was the only goalie coach.
Right.
Like, they bring guys in for when they have a camp or something, but like, it seems a little wild to me that Hockey Canada, who, you know, we've been so proud of and they've accomplished so much. And now we look at the Four Nations, and nothing against Binnington and those guys, but those are the Canadian goalies. Well, maybe a goalie coach and having some camps in the summer that every other nation does might be time that Canada starts trying to catch back up to that a bit.
I would love to see Canada, like, one thing that's sort of different right now about Canada's roster going into the Four Nations tournament versus how we felt about the 2010 team, for example, playing in Vancouver, where Canada hadn't won gold in best on best in 8 years, right? And had only won two of the last four at the senior level and had lost in 96. You know what I mean? So it was like this moment where Canada didn't feel as dominant in best on best as we do now. Before the... Now, on some level, that dominance of the international game in 2010...
In 2014.
Yeah. Was based off of defensive play, right? Like, the thing that I remember best about that 2010 team was the Doughty-Keith pair, right? Where you had, like, two of the fastest defenders in hockey playing defense first, and that Richards-Taves-Rick Nash line, right? That, like, came together for the Russian game and just absolutely dominated. And then, obviously, we all remember in Sochi, it was, like, P.K. Subban being scratched and Chris Kunitz on the top line and on, right? That team struggled to score mightily. And then just, you could have played 100 or 240 minutes against them with the best players assembled from all the other countries, and they still wouldn't have gotten more than a goal. But I wonder now, with like McDavid, Bedard, even though he's not going to be on that roster, McKinnon. Like,
yeah, Makar.
Like, right now, it feels like Canada has the artists. I almost look at the Canadian talent pool the way I used to look at the Russian talent pool, you know, except with more depth on defense. There's like real artistry, and yet the way that the Canadian national team plays has no reflection of where the game is trending in this country. Is there a way to address that? Or do you agree? Is this anything?
Well, you know what? I think... Can John Cooper address that? Like, John Cooper's the coach. I have a pretty high degree of confidence in him matching how he wants to play with that team to the roster. And I do wonder if they're able to have success because he's flexible, does that trickle down then to the U20 level, right?
I think it also helps that Cooper has the makeup he has had in Tampa as well. Like, he's had his, like, superstars on the back end and up front. And then how do I fill in a team with the rest of the depth, or they just keep pulling these pieces that just work in a system. But he's able to, and I think it's probably just the way he communicates and handles himself, but like, he's able to get stars down to fourth liners and call up guys to all buy into the same exact system. Like, and it's a system of speed and creativity and everything, but it's kind of once you get out of the blue, like your end. He's like, you know, you do my thing down here, go do whatever you want down that way. Like, that's kind of how this newer age is like, you know, if I'm coaching, like, what am I going to tell McDavid to do offensively? Like, dude, just kind of plan our system down here and then like go create your own. Like, that's the best part.
Go skate at 1.5 times speed relative to everyone else, but
and then just lap the zone six times and make a play, could you?
Undress three defenders and then dish off to your open teammate. Yeah, exactly.
But I think
do
that
play.
But I think that's part of it is understanding that it's not as much straight coaching anymore as it is a discussion with someone at the head of that. And that's a big difference.
Yeah. Anyways, I do think Cooper, I mean, there's a reason he's chosen, right? I think if there's anyone who can kind of change the culture of how Hockey Canada wants to play, it's probably him, and he'll have the guys to do it at the Four Nations, especially with all the players he's already familiar with, right? They took Hagel, Point, and Sorelli. So he'll have lots of guys there.
That's just going to be a line, right?
Yeah, you would think so.
Maybe they play Point a little higher up.
Yeah,
because usually they play those two with Paul. Mm-hmm. And that line, by the way,
buzzes.
They look like such a nightmare to play.
Yes.
Oh man,
it's like there's no dog left for anyone else. They've got them all.
They've got all the dogs.
Yeah.
All right. We've solved Hockey Canada, so that's great. We'll move on to the Canucks in the next segment. They played last night. They play again tonight. We'll get into that with Landon Ferraro next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
You know, January 2nd coming out of the new year. We all think this is kind of in the past, but because Alvin gave that interview to Ian McIntyre, it's sort of back on the forefront, and then you've got like former teammates lining up to comment on it, and Bo Horvat and Brad Richardson, and now insiders with their own competing updates, trade speculation. I was saying to Jamie in the first segment, I feel like this is the loudest it's ever been around this team, and maybe it's just the product of they've won 2 of 7, but maybe there's more to it. What's sort of your overarching take of how you're thinking about this at this juncture in the season?
I will first start by saying that, man, I was really pumped that I thought we were done talking about it too. I will start by saying that.
Yep.
But no, like, I think you touched on it towards the end there of the wins aren't there. And when things don't go right, you start looking at other things as well. Like, you're telling me, and again, like, none of us know what is really going on and to what extent, but you're telling me from beginning of last year to this year, things have gotten that much worse that it can't work?
Mm-hmm.
Or could it just be they both got off to slower starts, the team is losing, and you know, I say losing, like we're making it sound like they're bottom feeders, but like for what promise this team had coming into the year and so much excitement, it has not gone anywhere near it. And I think, I honestly think that's what you chalk up pretty much all of this to. And then the fact that, you know, you hear everywhere of different guys popping up saying that, you know, like teams are calling and now the Canucks are calling, like all of this, like, well, of course they are. And I said it yesterday with Dan and Sat, but like this management group shouldn't have their jobs if they're not taking those calls and making calls. Like that happens basically year round, except for like 3 weeks in the summer when managers say like, I'm actually taking
it when they're at the cottage.
And even then, let's be real.
If something pops up, they're happily sitting there.
People in this business work way too much in August. As a general rule.
Like there's, but like, you know, like you, those calls are being made year round and it is part of your, like their job. Just like if you're a stock boy at a grocery store and you decide to not stock one of the lanes because you just didn't feel like it that day, you're probably not going to have your job very long. Like you have to do every part of it, and whether things are going good or not, that's part of it.
So part of the, you know, as Drant said, the general manager speaks to Ian McIntyre and has pretty pointed criticism of Elias Pettersson, you know, even leaves the door open to making a trade. And I think it's easy to read that as trying to send a message, right? Trying to send a wake-up call. And obviously you think first and foremost about sending that message to Elias Pettersson, but when you, if you're a player, any player in that locker room, and you see that type of interview where, you know, he says like, hey, I'm kind of glass half empty on the season, right? It's acknowledging the disappointment. I mean, even if your name doesn't come up specifically, if you're farther down the roster, does that still send a pretty direct message to everyone on the team when you see the general manager come out like that?
For sure. There's no way to hear your boss say that and not perk your ears up a little bit. But I would be wildly surprised if we got us three got to walk into the Canucks dressing room and ask them one by one, were you surprised or like, was that too much? Not one player. And I would honestly probably say Pettersson would sit there and say, like, he's right.
Yeah.
Like, I need to be better. He's said it before already as well. And that's part of it, of being the top paid player or one of the best players on your team. When things aren't going right, you're going to get looked at more. Mm-hmm. You're going to be the one, like, they're not going to go, you know, Alvin's not going to circle around Sasson.
He's not going to rip Teddy Bluger.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Could you imagine? Oh,
we need more out of Max Sasson.
Bluger has really been holding us back this year.
5 points in 15 games, Max? You think that's cutting it?
Like,
that would be incredible. That would be like the amazing. Funniest thing of all time.
But no, like, it's part of it. Like, you have to be able to sit there and be an adult and accept some of the responsibility of what's been going on. But I don't, again, like, I just don't, if I'm sitting in that dressing room as a fourth liner,
yeah,
I'm happy that was said. And I don't mean it directed at Pettersson, but I mean, to hear your boss say like, no, like, guys, this is not good enough. We need to make changes. We need this to go better. Like, I haven't been on one team where I've been sitting there and thinking like, man, I wish we could make a move to make our team worse.
Right.
Like, I just want this to be done.
Yeah.
No, every single year, you know, you're 1 year closer to not playing the game of hockey. You only have a certain amount of time and you're never guaranteed extra years in the NHL. You can find leagues anywhere in the world to keep playing, but not at the top level. Like, you can't waste a year. It doesn't matter if it's because of injuries or poor play or whatever the thing is. If there's a way to solve it, you want your team to solve it. Even if that means one of your buddies might be on the way out, or it might even be you. But at the end of the day, you might be mad about it or a bit of hurt feelings. But at the same time, like, you want your team to make your team better. Like, that's all that matters.
So dating back to December 8th now, Canucks have played 12 games with 12 points. So 500 point percentage hockey. They've won four, three of them in overtime or regulation. So they've won three plus the shootout loss yesterday.
Shootout win.
What did I say?
Loss.
Yeah.
It's a tie. Whatever. It's a tie with a bonus point. Anyway, so they've lost eight, won three, tied one with a bonus point. The thing about this, Landon, is like, when a team has this many injuries, is this limited, plays this poorly in stretches of the last 12 games, and then you look at it and it's like, well, they have 12 points in 12 games. You know, they, on the one hand, they've only won three of them. On the other hand, they've grinded out at least a point in eight of them. Like, that to me sometimes is, it's, and this is not me looking for positives, but
oh, it sure sounds like it, and I'm all here for it. Let's go.
But sometimes when a team has a quote unquote bad stretch in which the results are basically fine, I look at that as a good indicator of team strength.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. Like, how could you not look at, you know, just looking at last night, take out the ones from before even, but like, look at last night, they find a way to pull out a win.
Yeah.
And, you know, he can sit over here and make fun of the shootout all he wants, but it's part of the game. So there's the extra point. It is what it is.
No, it's fine. I just quibble with the idea of like, if they'd lost the shootout, Vancouver Sports Radio today would be like,
They blew another one. Yeah.
And I would be sitting here doing the exact same bit. Jamie will vouch for me. I'd be like, they tied. So it's just something that I always do.
Did you say that after the Canada one against Latvia?
Well, no, because international...
Well, I mean, they kind of tie.
No, but international play, it's part of the thing.
Is it not part of the thing here? It's part of the game. It's in the rule book. We go from overtime to shootout. That's part
the
of the thing.
The Canucks went 650 games without winning a shootout. 650 days without winning a shootout. It's like, It's a sideshow that they do only because coaches have soared 3-on-3 to this point.
I hate the shootout too. I'm like, I'm sitting here taking the other side. I hate the shootout.
People used to be so excited about it. Now it's like,
analytically, like, just the way I think about it, I just think about it as a tie. It's not really a win. It's not really a loss. It's just you get to the point of a shootout. It's a tie. That's just like how I view it.
Yeah, you're not totally wrong.
Yeah.
it is what it is.
You played 65 minutes of hockey and we're tied. It's a tie. Well,
someone should have scored.
I agree.
But no.
And by the way, that someone was Bjorkstrand.
One's got to go in eventually, no?
You'd think. This is the other thing that I can't get over is it's like, on the one hand, 12 points in 12 games. Awesome. On the other hand, Sharon Govich and Bjorkstrand alone, if they'd had average finishing nights for them, the Canucks are probably flattened in both those games. Like, we're talking about a 3-0 loss to, or 5-0 loss, 5-1 loss to Calgary, and probably a 5-3 loss to Seattle.
I mean, it's hard to fight you on that. Yeah. Really, like, it is.
Like, those guys just were not finishing their chances.
Yeah, Bjorkstrand was, honestly, it's one of those, even if you're a fan of the Canucks, you almost felt bad on the third one. You're like, dude, like, just go in for him, please. But, I mean, like, sadly, that's not how it works.
Nope.
But no, like, again, I'll go back to what I was kind of saying yesterday as we were talking about the D. Like, yes, you shouldn't be letting people consistently behind you, but you're now again asking guys who have already stepped up their game to another level that they weren't playing at earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go through the whole defense core that's in there right now, take out Breezeau because it was his first game,
yeah,
but you look at all those guys, are any of them worse than the start of the year? If anything, I would say they are miles ahead of where they were at the start of the year. Like, it was tough back there. Like, Carson Soucy has turned himself around by a mile. His skating has seemed to come back to him. Tyler Myers has been pretty strong. Forbert, since he's come back in, has been really legitimate back there and playing some solid minutes. But you're still asking guys to play more minutes than they've ever handled in the league, whether they're young and Desharnais or they're older and been in the league, but they've kind of been at a, whatever, throw out a number of 14 minutes average every night, and now they're playing 16. Like, it's really hard to consistently play more and more and be so sharp and try and still knowing that someone on the back end needs to provide and help some offense as well, right? Like, that's a huge piece that all, if you look at all those, like, they're basically, like, they're a turnover while the weak side was trying to get up to join. Mm. Like, that's what they're supposed to be doing, but the puck cannot turn over. So you could say it's kind of the D, but... well, maybe it's a little bit on the forwards too, not helping, not understanding the situation of someone's joining. It's no different than, for how like minor and simple this seems, but it's kind of the exact same thing of, you have been on the ice forever, you need a change. Well, you can't just go make a change when you want to and just sewer the rest of your guys. Like,
right.
By turning that puck over, it's almost the same exact thing. Like, you're forcing people into bad spots.
Well said. I just want to ask you before we go to break. So they're all dealing with playing without Hughes and Pettersson. What's the feeling like when those guys get back in the lineup? You know what I mean? Like, we heard, is it, because you don't want to like take your foot off the gas, but you also, the feeling of, especially with Hughes and the way he's been playing, it must be a pretty immense sense of relief when you get a player like that coming back into your lineup.
Like, to get Pettersson back into your lineup's got to be amazing.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. I don't want to downplay that because he's an amazing player, and you can say whatever you want about how the year has gone and all this, but like, he had been kind of turning it on a bit. Things have looked a bit better, but he's a massive piece.
He's still the only Canucks center in the black in terms of winning their minutes 5-on-5 in the minutes away from Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
So especially with where they're at right now, getting Pettersson back would be massive.
And I think that's, not to sidebar it and bring it down this way again, but like, and I think that's a point that people quickly forget, is even when everyone's in the lineup and they're having, you know, Miller and Pettersson are having these years, like, he was matching Miller's points the whole way through, basically.
Yeah,
not
until
with
the last
Hughes.
2 minutes, yeah.
Or not 2 months. With, yeah, like, not with Hughes.
Yeah.
Like, that is a massive massive undertaking to take when, you know, now we're talking about Q's coming back in. Like, that completely changes the makeup of the team. And there's not many guys in the league that it's that stark of a difference in and out. I think the biggest important thing would be, and honestly, like, for with Quinn almost kind of owning it as well, of like making the like little joke, but I'm being serious, of like, hey guys, like, we're back. I'm not saving us here. Like, I've just watched you. And he could go, honestly, he could almost go around the room and like, I've watched you and you and you picked your game up from the time that I was out and Petey was out and whatever else he wants to say. But like, guys, you keep going like that. We're not this middling team. Like, we're your team that can actually do something. And I truly believe that. Like, again, like, looking at that win last night, was it pretty? Nah, not really. But it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, they found a way to win with massive pieces out of the lineup. Demko going out, giving up massive chances instantly.
First 7 minutes were brutal.
And Lankinen stepped in like he'd been playing in this fire for months already.
Well,
like,
he has.
Yeah, but not on a night where he thought he was out and he's sitting there and he probably had a hot dog in the back already.
Ate half a garbage bag of popcorn.
It is the best. I miss that yellow bag bowels of the rink so bad. Try and steal one on the way out to the car every time.
Oh, man.
Great stuff, Landon. Really appreciate it. Thank you for coming in studio with us. We'll do this again soon, man.
Sounds good. Everyone,
That's funny. Landon Ferraro. We got one more segment left. We'll look ahead to the game tonight, Canucks and the Predators at Rogers Arena here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650, final segment of the week. No Dimitri, as mentioned earlier. He's still enjoying some time off, rest and relaxation. So he'll get back on the show next week. Looking forward to that already. But the Canucks do play the Nashville Predators, second half of a back-to-back for them, and just a one-game homestand for the Canucks before they take off and leave on a big Eastern road trip. First stop, Montreal on Monday. They'll also go through Washington, Carolina, Toronto, and Winnipeg on that one. So a lengthy road trip for the Canucks coming up after this game against Nashville. For some more thoughts, a little bit on last night and looking ahead to the game tonight as well, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, same thing, consistency. You know, that's what you always strive for. Sustainability. I thought, we got some really good efforts from some guys that really, I thought, won us the game. You know, Sass's line was really good. Myers obviously had a great game for us. I mean, I can name a bunch of guys, but now it's sustainability and consistency. You know, it's a short turnaround, so you really got to make sure you stay with your team identity and team system when you, I'm not saying we're not going to have our legs, but you can win these games by just playing the right way.
Situation. Yeah. Who's starting and who's your backup?
Yeah, Langs will be in net. We called up Seeloff, so it looks like he'll be backing up. I think Denver had that back spasm. I haven't checked in with them this morning. But back spasm, they can go away in 24 hours or 40 hours. I don't know. I've had them before, so we'll see how we go with that.
So Seeloff is coming back from Quebec?
Yeah. Yep.
What about the lineup changes? Is Petey available tonight?
No, him and Quinn aren't in, but they're getting close. Yeah, Petey's been skating in Quinn quite a bit, so we'll see how that goes.
We'll travel on this.
Yeah, they'll be with us. Yeah, for sure.
Where's your appreciation for Connor Garland and what he can do for your team night in, night out?
Well, he's a driver, right? When he's on the four, he's one of our best four checkers. He has a puck a lot. I talk about this year about winning battles. And when you're 5 foot, I don't want to demean him, but was he 5'7"? I don't know how tall he is, but when a guy like that can win more his share of battles, it's actually an inspiration for a lot of our players.
JT and his line were the low ice time guys last night. They were good in Calgary for you, but like, was that just a reflection of they weren't going, or other guys were going, or?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the I thought the other guys deserved a little bit more, and sometimes guys that usually play 17, 18, you know, those two extra, three extra minutes, I thought the other lines deserved it. You know, they didn't have their best, but you know, Millsy came up with a big goal for us in the shootout. I mean, you know, you got to contribute some way.
You ask about Lincoln and a lot, but that's a good thing because he just keeps on. I mean, he came in and had to make two spectacular saves right away. What can you more can you say about that?
Well, it's after the game we were talking. Like Lanks, you got to remember, like being in Nashville and Chicago, especially. He's probably sometimes never played in 2-3 weeks as a backup, you know. I have a lot of respect for those type of guys where they could sit for 2 weeks, go in there and give you a game. Obviously, that's not happening this year because he's playing a lot. But for him to sit the bench, go in there cold, I mean, you're sitting on a stool for, you know, he's probably sitting there for an hour and a half. It's not like he's getting shots. To go in there and face two high danger shots, I mean, he's been like that all year. You know, he's the mentality we want, you know, where, every night where he just puts his on the line every night.
Same 60 tonight? Or do you...
I'll talk to Footy, but I like the way the D played last night. I thought they were scrappy. I thought a lot of guys did some good stuff for us.
Everything of Vinny getting a shift in OT?
Yeah, well, Footy came, he goes, you know, Myers was tired, Seuss just came off, and I said, go with your gut, you know. And Vinny made a hell of a pass, but... I wish, is it Sherwood who had the shot or
DeBrus?
That would have been nice for Vinny to get assists on overtime, I think. He might have signed that puck.
That's Rick Tocchet speaking to the media earlier today at Rogers Arena, raving about Vincent Desharnais' pass to Kiefer Sherwood
but
in
also,
overtime.
But also explaining, you know, that
how
like,
it came to pass.
When, like, Foot came down to me to explain why.
Yeah. Well, he asked, and he was like, go with your gut. He's like, all right, my gut's saying Desharnais.
And hey.
His gut was right.
Well,
it paid off.
His gut was right.
I love that. He would have signed that puck if he had gotten the assist.
Hell yeah. It would have been awesome. That would have been such a funny storyline.
It would have been great. Well, yeah. And I mean, there is something to the idea of you need to find those sparks when... things are going against you and you don't have your top guys, right? And can the team rally around like, oh my goodness, Vincent Desharnais picked up an assist in overtime. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of moment that the other players on the team go nuts for and have a ton of fun with and can kind of galvanize you, I think. So I get why Talk was kind of saying, man, I wish that had gone in for him just to pick up that assist. Other notes from Tocchet. Mentions that they've called Shelov's up, so it looks like he's going to be backing up tonight as Thatcher Demko deals with back spasms. No further update on that. Again, Rick Tocchet saying, look, there's some uncertainty when it comes to back spasms, but again, saying that it is that, not a knee or anything like that for Thatcher Demko. And also saying, you know, he hasn't talked to Foot, or at least at the time he hadn't talked to Foot, about the combinations on the blue line, but liked how the defense played last night, thought they were scrappy. So it would seem to indicate, I mean, if you had to guess, I think you would be guessing that they line up the same six guys on the blue line.
No
tonight.
Question. Yeah. No question. And, you know, we'll see. I like at the end of the day, there may be something Pyrrhic in that I do think this defensive group as it's currently constructed requires Erik Brännström.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it worked last night, taking nothing away from how the defense competed, how they played well, how the Canucks actually control play at 5-on-5 with sort of escalating efficiency in the second half of the contest. I still sort of look at this and think, hey, you know, if you're going to move the puck well enough in the absence of both Hughes and Hronek, Brännström for me is a must start. So I understand the decision. I don't think it's the right one.
Yeah. It was all, I think, even though they went in the shootout, right? It's the classic coach's thing of like, oh, winning lineup. Are we going to change it? And I don't think that should necessarily come into play in a shootout victory, but it's one of those NHL coaches' things that's pretty hard to dislodge.
Yeah, although it's, you know, we have seen Tocchet tweak winning lineups.
Yeah.
Like, we have not seen them be certainly compared to your average NHL coaching staff, we haven't seen them be that set,
yeah,
in my opinion anyway, in terms of lineup tweaks and sort of matchup needs versus the play the winning lineup thing.
Well, I think even you go back to last year, around this time, actually, when they had Zadorov and then Soucy got healthy, right? So they had seven guys mm-hmm. they trusted because Juleson was playing for them as well, and they were rotating through. You know what I mean? Yep. And Zadorov got scratched and Cole got scratched. They would go through the lineup yep. like that. So they can do it. You're right. It just seems to be they really don't want to play Eric Branstrom if there are other options available and playing well. And, you know, shout out to Guillaume Brisebois for coming in and doing the job after a really long layoff last night in Seattle. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I thought the first answer there from Rick Talk, it was pretty interesting as well. You know, just really stressing that, in his words, you can win these games just by playing the right way. And as much as I think we all kind of look at this stretch of the schedule for as long as they're out as without Hughes and Pettersson, and kind of you almost put it to the side, like it's an interlude in the season, but it's not going to tell us a lot about this team overall because you're just missing two incredibly important contributors, and obviously Quinn Hughes, I mean, playing at an MVP level this season. So it's almost it's tempting, and I think it makes a lot of sense to keep it separate from the rest of the judgments we're making about the team. But hearing that from Rick Tocchet, right, you can win these games just by playing the right way. Go ahead.
I just want to direct our listeners to JFresh Hockey. At JFresh Hockey tweeted a graph or a table that I also know. I guess it's a graph, a scatter plot that I shared on my I retweeted it on my Twitter feed. But it's effectively expected goals for versus against mm-hmm. every team in the league. And where you want to be is on the top right quadrant.
Yes.
Which is plus like, offense, yeah. plus defense. And that's where, like, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Washington Capitals, the New Jersey Devils, the Edmonton Oilers, the LA Kings live. And the Canucks with Quinn Hughes are, like, better than the Devils and in that elite tier. With their overall numbers considered, they're more like St. Louis and Chicago and Detroit. And without Quinn Hughes, they break the table.
They are off the charts.
They are off the charts. It's an incredible illustration of just how valuable he's been as sort of an individual driver.
Yeah. Somebody in our inbox, I think it was in our inbox yesterday, compared him, he called him the Nikola Jokic of the NHL. Just the insane on-off splits that the Nuggets have every year with Jokic, where the bench just cannot get it done on a consistent basis when he's off the court. And there is something to that with the way Quinn Hughes is playing this year. But you know, back to the idea of, okay, you can win these games just by playing the right way. And Landon was kind of touching on this as well, how, okay, maybe you can find something in the absence of these players that will carry over, that something positive that can transfer to even when they're back in the lineup. Because that idea of playing the right way, I know you've mentioned this as well, that there's been some concern in Canucks management. Are they playing the right way? Are they doing enough?
I don't think it's, and for them, it's not a question.
Yeah, they're not.
They're not playing the right way consistently.
Yeah. So I don't think that's just kind of a throwaway platitude from Rick Tocchet when he says, hey, you can win these games just by playing the right way. Like, no. I read pretty significantly into that we need to relearn that lesson that maybe mm-hmm. we learned last year and have forgotten at some point, that there's a way we have to play to be successful. We will be successful. We can even be successful with it in pretty adverse situations if we stick to it and if we do it. And I don't know that it, you know, who knows what we'll see tonight, right? One of the hallmarks of this team this year has been inconsistency in that regard. So I'm not saying all of a sudden they've rediscovered it. They've refound the formula from last year. But I think what Tocchet is getting at is, let's stop worrying about who's in and out of the lineup. Let's focus on playing the right way. And then guess what? If we're doing that, and then we get Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson back in the lineup, well, all of a sudden our ceiling is a lot higher if we keep playing the right way. I think that's pretty significant from Rick Tocchet, what he's taking from the game and the win last night in Seattle.
I think that's right. I do think they played the right way, and I do think part of the magic of it that the organization believes in anyway is, like, if you play the right way and commit to defense and commit to doing all the selfless stuff that helps us win, everyone actually also scores more.
Yeah, it's actually also way more fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's the kind of thing where it's like, it might be tough to start doing it, but then you get this cycle going where it's way more fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I do find that idea of like selling fun in a way, because I don't think this season's been fun for the players. Not like last season. And maybe it's not fun to start playing the right way, but guess what? It could be a lot more fun. Either. Nope. So I think that, like, I think there's something to that of, okay, hey, I know it's tough to commit to defense. It's tough to always commit to playing the right way like this, but you saw last year how it can lead to success. It's just kind of baffling that the message needs to be reinforced. You know what I mean? Like, shouldn't last year have been the proof and the evidence to convince guys, to get them on board, to stick with it through this year? Maybe you can't build that kind of culture, that kind of identity just in 1 year. Maybe it's inherently a multi-year process, but whatever the case is, it feels like they need that reminder. Maybe that Seattle game, maybe that win, maybe this stretch without Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, if we're doing like maximum silver lining wish casting here, maybe that will be the reminder.
You'd hope so. I mean, if you can play the way the Canucks did, despite being overmatched from a Jimmy's and Joe's perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
And still grind out that level of control against the Kraken, where we're saying, hey, you know what? They were actually probably pretty unfortunate to have coughed up that lead, right? There should be something you can build up there. Now, second leg of a back-to-back against a Predators team that should be playing desperate hockey. It's a tough assignment-ish. It's a tough-ish assignment.
Yeah, it's not... Let's not oversell it too much.
We're not going to. And then this Montreal Canadiens team that's been red hot.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of overselling it, the way that Montreal fans hold on to hope, I think we all should learn something from that. I feel like there's something uplifting about how Canadiens fans support their teams that I feel like maybe Canucks fans are just more cynical or something, but it's like, There's no world in which a Canucks player could be acquired, score only on the power play, get roundly outscored at 5-on-5, and have everyone in the market be like, Patrick Laine has changed this team. There's just no world.
No.
Nick Suzuki is their number one center.
They're in the playoff race.
Cole Caulfield is better than Austin Matthews. Lane Hutson is an elite defenseman. Like, the Habs fans believe a whole host of nonsense.
It's true. They made a whole documentary about it, The Rebuild.
I know, but it's just like Lane Hutson is what Quinn Hughes detractors used to say Quinn Hughes is.
Yeah.
You know? But I swear you never hear that said in the Montreal market. It's mind-blowing.
It's an interesting one.
Isn't it weird?
It is a weird one, because you think it's like... should be the harshest market,
and then
right?
People say stuff like it's the smartest hockey market in the world, the highest level of hockey IQ, and it's like, I don't know, I see a lot of people comparing Cole Caulfield to much better players.
You also got to think it's it also has the rep for being one of the hardest markets, right? One of the, like it's not right now, but I think in the past that's been true.
I still think people say that because the noise comes at you in two languages.
I also think
watchword for it.
I think this is also one of the all-time examples of how if your true goal is to get favorable media coverage, which it shouldn't be. Your true goal should be to try to win the Stanley Cup. But if that was your true goal, there is nothing better than rebuilding to get favorable media coverage, right?
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It's like it is the ultimate pass until it eventually goes wrong if you don't pull out of it. But you look at the coverage that the Montreal Canadiens have got since rebuilding and hiring Martin Saint-Louis and the results that have been on the ice. I mean, it is absolutely night and day.
It's incredible.
And that's basically it. Like if you're trying to figure out, okay, how do we get some people to say some nice things about our hockey team? You rebuild. And apparently even in Montreal, that will work. Now, the backlash eventually, if it never culminates into an actual competitive team, will be pretty harsh.
Yeah, they probably
have. But in the interim, they earned a lot of soft coverage.
They probably have a couple years.
I think they have one more year left.
Yeah.
I think if they are bad next year, then it starts to get pretty hot, I would think. I think they got this year. They can sell like, oh, we made a late push. We played some meaningful games in March. They can do that. And then I think time's up next year. Like, are they a year behind the Detroit cycle? You know what I mean? And patience has started to really run thin there.
I think they're probably more than that. That said, you know, they have won 7 of their last 10. right? Mm-hmm. And they've outscored their opposition at 5-on-5. And honestly, they've been in better form than the Canucks as we look ahead to Monday.
Yep.
Right? Like, they have been in better form than the Canucks. It shouldn't be a shocking if the Canucks don't have Hughes and Pettersson back for that game. If the Canucks find themselves in a
no, of course not.
In a real, you know.
No, they're not like a bottom feeder. It's just they haven't accomplished anything yet.
Yeah. And the way their best players have talked about has very little relationship to the reality as I perceive it of that hockey team.
Indeed.
But, so it goes.
Somebody texted in, Drance hating on Joy warms the cackles. Yeah. Of somebody else's players.
They're just joyful and simplistic about their enjoyment of their hockey team. Nerds.
Those idiots just sitting down and liking their hockey team. They don't get it. They don't get it at my level.
Yeah, okay, you know.
That is like the meme of the comic where the guy's just like walking down the street whistling a happy tune and the guy in the background is like, look at this idiot.
It's also very much the Superintendent Chalmers thing where it's like, no, it's the children that
are wrong. Yeah, exactly. It's the Habs fans that are wrong. All right, we'll end it on that note. Canucks Preds tonight. You can hear it here on the station. I'll be doing intermissions with Bic at Rogers Arena. Enjoy the game. Have a great weekend. We're back on Monday for more Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.